The Card Knock Life podcast is brought to you by ManaTraders.com. ManaTraders is your leading MTG and paper card and deck rental service. Use the promo code CardKnockLife, one word, at checkout for 14% off your first 4 months. Welcome to Card Knock Life, episode 129. I'm your host, Corey. Daryl is still moving. We've got John back with us to finish off the Guilds of Ravnica spoilers, this time gold cards. Hey, John.
Hello. Hello. How's it going, Corey?
Yeah, before we forget, oh, I should say good, first of all. Yeah, good. It's going good. How are you?
Good.
Good. To mention this, we were called out last week, rightfully so, because we kept thinking that Amonkhet would be remaining in Standard. But there's a handy-dandy site called whatsinstandard.com, and that site confirms that, I was completely wrong about that. So a couple of the assessments we made based on the playability of some cards in Standard are just kind of inaccurate because of the fact that we're going to be losing Kaladesh block and Amonkhet block on October 5th when Guilds is legal. So that's a pretty big deal, and I apologize for that. That was totally my fault. You'd think that as a host of a podcast on Magic the Gathering, I would know Magic the Gathering stuff, but there are just too many details. This game has never-ending news.
Yeah, and you know, I should have caught it too. I think it's one of those things where you say a wrong thing and neither person thinks about it too much, and you just kind of stick with it. So
yeah. So it was John's fault, really.
It was my fault. I will take full blame. You can direct all of your inquiries to thediscard.com. Just go to that website, click a couple links. Eventually, you'll find a way to contact me, I'm sure.
It's like, no press is bad press, right? Did you play any Magic this since we last spoke, John?
Yes. I played some Arena. Mostly I was drafting, and I played a little bit of Momir. For anybody who's not playing Arena and doesn't look online, they actually just recently announced that this last week was going to be the final wipe before the open beta. And after that, there's going to be no more account wipes. So this was basically my time to use up all those remaining gems before they get credited back with the open beta.
Yeah, man, I'm a little bit nervous about having to start completely over in Arena. And they were pretty generous with the... When Kaladesh was released late on Arena, they gave you a lot of cards to kind of, like, start your collection on that. So that helped quite a bit. But, man, I spent many hours accumulating the lands that I needed for Standard decks. What were you saying?
Well, the interesting thing about when it comes back is you actually won't have Kaladesh available at all. It's going to come back with just what's currently in Standard, and then they're going to add those other cards back in at some future date. So,
oh, sure.
It's kind of interesting because they're going live with what's going to be presumably the permanent, obviously the game's going to keep going, but the permanent collection for it, and you kind of just lose out on two whole blocks. It's just kind of...
Oh, that's weird. They've already done the work, like, programming them. It's like, they've experimented with some, like, quote-unquote eternal formats on Arena as well. But this may be a game where you never get to play Scarab God.
I think that you will. I have a feeling they'll come back within the next year. They were pretty aggressive with getting sets in there. And I know it's, you know, they're kind of starting with Standard when they come back. But I feel like that'll probably be something where they go, okay, it's back for drafting and Sealed, which Sealed is launching when they come back for the first time, I believe, in Arena. So I think they'll probably work that stuff back in that way.
Uh-huh.
But at the same time, I don't know how many sets I really want them rotating through in drafts, since I mostly draft. You know, you kind of like to play a draft set for a while to get used to it. But
yeah,
I'm looking forward to see how it goes. I think there's a lot of promise there for all the problems I have with the game as it stands. There's a lot of exciting stuff they could do there.
Yeah, did you see the teaser trailer for the open beta with Danny Trejo and Day 9?
Yes, and I think the most amazing thing about that is they made Danny Trejo sound like he almost knew what he was talking about.
I know. I was thinking the same thing. It's like, does he actually play?
No, probably not. But I mean,
he's a professional actor.
We've all seen seen ads like that where they bring somebody into some fan community. You could tell they're just like learning how to pronounce the words or whatever.
Yeah,
but they,
yeah,
they just did a really good job. Yeah.
Day 9 has really kind of become the poster child for Magic, like digital products especially, but also with the Spellslinger series, I've watched that a couple of times, and I had missed out on like 5 seasons of it before I started to watch the show. It's not like I'm like committed to watching it at this point because it's not really for me. It's kind of more geared towards new players, but even for old and franchise players, it is entertaining. It's pretty hilarious. He's very, fun to listen to.
Yeah. I think when they brought it back, they had a new push. Cause I, like you said, it was around for several seasons before. And I really like, I kind of didn't remember that it existed when they brought it back. But yeah, it's definitely more of a casual market geared sort of show, you know, like entertaining people playing the game. Like I know if you're somebody who's really in franchise in the game, it can be a little bit annoying to see somebody who doesn't know what they're talking about play the game. But obviously, you know, that's kind of part of the fun for some people is seeing somebody, you know, learning the game or, you know, especially if you're a more casual player, I think that it's kind of cool to see celebrities, well, just funny people doing
right, and they're kind of like B-list celebrities, a lot of them that he has on his show.
Internet celebrities,
yeah. But the way that he teaches the game, and then they must, you know, they heavily edit this thing obviously because they make the learners look like they're catching on very, very fast, and they have good conversations. It's like I said, entertaining is a good word for it.
Yeah, and I think it's really good to have more highly produced content in general. I think it makes the game look overall look more professional, I think, when you see stuff like this come out. I mean, really the only other people doing anything like it are probably the Game Nights guys. Like that's the only content that's really like Magic Games edited so much just because it is so much work.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think the more stuff like that the better.
You know, speaking of like the kind of like PR aspect of the game, there was a lot of backlash about the Worlds event this last weekend, and as much as there was this discontent about how it was poorly advertised and how people had to really search for the results, and it should really be plastered like on the homepage, like who won Worlds? Let's make this person like, you know, kind of like a face of the game for, you know, until the next Worlds. This is the reigning champion. You know, like make a big deal out of it. I did check into the event a little bit, and I rolled my eyes at the fact that I was seeing only black and red aggro decks, which I think is another one of the big pieces of disappointment. But I thought that at least for the way that it was edited and the way that it was shot was much improved from previous streams of tournaments in the past. It was like crystal clear quality. They were trying all these different angles with the cameras. That was really cool, and they really kind of built to the drama of the finals match when they had the trophy sitting on the table between the two players, and you know the set was pretty incredible as well. It was all well done on that front, though I would very much agree that the advertisement for it was probably less than the Star City Games event that was going on the same weekend. You know, it's like the company that makes the game itself is getting blown out of the water by a third party company that, you know, runs their own events. Using its cards.
Yeah. It was red black aggro mirror match for the final, right?
It was. 50% of the field was red black aggro.
Yeah. So I think first of all, I'll say I can't really comment on the quality of the actual stream. I'll have to just defer to your judgment on that because I didn't watch any of it. I think that the field being mostly red black aggro is actually probably the reason why it felt like Wizards didn't really give a damn about promoting this event. You know, I think the fact that a lot of people didn't even realize it was happening until Jerry T posted his protest of it.
Right.
I think it's pretty telling, and I think a lot of it has to do with where Standard is. I'm really hoping that this next Standard environment is the first one that we're really seeing play designs influence, because if half of the people are playing one deck, and I know Worlds and other big events like that can be a little different than you know, the real world metagame.
Mm-hmm.
But when it's so heavily dominated by one deck and Wizards doesn't really know what to do other than ban more cards or, you know, do something drastic like that, I think people are just not interested in it. And as somebody who doesn't play a lot of Modern, but who watches a good deal of it,
mm-hmm.
part of why I watch it is because there are so many different interactions you can see. You just have such a wide card pool
versus
what's in Standard. And I think Wizards really has to either put less focus on Standard in general and find a way to sell more packs by doing, you know, cool stuff for Modern or Commander in sets, or they've got to really focus on how do we balance the Standard environment. I know it's a difficult task because you've got, you know, however many sets in Standard, sometimes, what, 8+ sets in Standard at a time?
Right, yeah.
So I think that you have enough cards that it's kind of a big task to balance it, but not so many cards that you have a wide pool of answers like Modern does, you know? I think that you see a lot of certain cards a lot in Modern, but I don't think you really see the same couple decks really dominate as much just because they're, like, that same deck can't necessarily be good against every other deck that's out there. So,
well, to that point, consider this. This standard format, that we are currently in includes exactly 8 sets. It is probably one of the bigger windows that we're going to see in this kind of rotation that we're dealing with. When Guilds of Ravnica comes out, we are going to have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 sets in Standard. So, this is about the peak of, like, possibilities for different decks. And even then, we still are very heavily focused on black-red aggro. And it has remained a powerhouse in Standard for a long time. It's been, like, kind of the undisputed best deck in the format. Now, things have popped up every once in a while with, like, the Bant Nexus, and there's, like, the Grixis midrange that was good for a little bit. But it was only a matter of time before people just, realized that, no, black-red just continues to be better than these decks all around.
Well, and also consider this world is coming, like, when people have basically already given up on the old Standard because new stuff is coming out, like, this weekend.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I think that doesn't help. If who wants to necessarily see
exactly
a whole bunch of the same deck that they can't even play with in a couple weeks?
Right.
So, I think there's a lot of stuff that was working against them, but I also don't think we can really give Wizards a pass on this because they've had a lot of time to do this kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah.
They really should be better at it than they are.
It's giving them a lot of credit.
But, you know, I believe in them. I believe that they can turn things around.
Yeah.
The game is still fun. Like,
now,
you really got to screw up Magic to make it not fun, I think.
Right. So, you have people that are obsessed with this game, and it's going to take a lot for people to start selling their collections because of their disappointment in the publicity, you know. But Jerry Thompson, you know, is a pretty good example of someone that's taking a pretty huge step in doing so. Now, granted, you mentioned that the kind of timing of this is pretty awful when it comes to constructed formats. And that's kind of the last format that's played in this event is Standard. But there is a portion of Worlds where it's draft. And draft was Guilds of Ravnica. And it was kind of cool to have a Guilds of Ravnica kind of preview to sort of kind of show off the upcoming set and get people excited about that. But still, with the constructed portion being like the part where people are looking at deck lists after the fact, it's kind of a bummer that we're seeing all these awesome decks, or not awesome decks in this case, that are only going to be relevant for another 7 days.
Yeah, I think the timing for draft in a professional environment like this is a little bit weird too, just because, like, on the one hand, you do have that excitement of, okay, now I'm getting to see these cards get played by really good players,
mm-hmm.
And I'm going to get to play with them soon. There's value in that, but there's also, I think, value in seeing what a pros look like after they've had time to really practice the format.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, I don't know that we'll ever have really a great timing for every format. But it is kind of interesting. And I do think there's always something exciting about seeing new interactions for the first time. That's, like, you know, one of the cool things you get with Limited is you get that several times a year, which is kind of neat.
Yeah. I played a PPTQ this last weekend. I took Bant Spirits to it. It went pretty well. I just rolled through the Swiss portion. I went 4-0, and then I could draw in the last two rounds to make the top eight. And then I lost in the first round of the top eight to Blood Moon.
No. Which
shouldn't be a big issue for that deck because I play like 4 Noble Hierarchs, I play 3 Aether Vials, and you know I can generally just get around Blood Moon by having access to other kinds of mana. But I knew I was up against Blood Moon, I was up against Ponza specifically, and I mulled aggressively to find pieces that would get me out of it, and I just the cards just didn't show up that when I needed to see them. And that deck can pretty consistently do turn two, like either Molten Rain or Blood Moon, and either of those things is bad when you don't have Noble or Aether Vial in play.
Bummer.
So, quick loss. But that said, I had a good time, and I think that Bant Spirits is a lot of fun. It's also very competitive. I think it's a great deck. Walked away with a bunch of, Arcanic Masters packs as a prize because of the way that they're paying out. And so in order to kind of recoup some of the cost of the event and sort of turn that into a little bit of a profit, I posted a couple of the cards that I pulled in those packs online, and I actually had a Mana Drain. So I sold a Mana Drain already last night and took it to the post office. So if you ship a card in like one of those brown bubble mailers, there is a trick to getting around like $3 extra of shipping costs, because when you put it in that package and you take it to the post office, they are supposed to tell you that they can't ship this unless you get like signature confirmation or put it priority mail, because it's considered quote unquote an envelope. And so I had this long conversation with the woman that was working there. I was like, I've done this so many times. What's the difference? And she showed me this flow chart they have. And it's like, if it's less than 3/4 inch thick, or if it is not, if it is machinable, then it's considered an envelope. So I was like, what if I put like a piece of paper, if I just wad up a piece of paper and I put it in the same envelope and I seal it? And she like kind of hesitated for a while. She's like, yeah, I guess that would be considered a package, because looking at the flow chart, it is more than 3/4 inch thick and is good to go. So I went in the car, I tore it open, put a little wad of paper in there and took it back in and saved $3 shipping the damn thing because of some stupid loophole in the rule. So usually they don't call you out on it. I've taken packages to the post office many times before, but since this is a podcast for Magic the Gathering players, I think many of us are in the business of selling our cards online or, you know, trading cards online. And here's one way to avoid a $3 fee on all of those cards that you may want to ship. So there you go. What's that?
Neat life hack.
Neat life hack. Yeah. Wad of paper. Anyways, so let's go on. Let's do these spoilers, man. We got to catch up on a couple of the monocolored cards that we didn't see last week because they came out since the podcast aired. There aren't many of them because we pretty much had the entire set at that point, with the exception of some commons and uncommons. And I think there are just a couple of quick ones we want to talk about. So,
yeah,
John, you want to bring up that blue one?
Yeah. Mostly just draft chaff.
Yeah,
was left. There are a couple worth talking about. Like you mentioned, I think literally two. We looked at was Selective Snare. It's a sorcery, add uncommon for X and a blue. Return X target creatures of the creature type of your choice to their owner's hand. I saw some people talking about how this might work well, particularly in the upcoming standard, if any tribal decks are popping up. And I think some people mentioned maybe sideboarding in some decks elsewhere. I'm not quite sure. I think the sweet spot is probably at bouncing two creatures, maybe, because once you get to the four mana, you're starting to compete with Wraths and some other.
Yeah, you're talking modern, right?
Well, yeah, I guess. I'm not even sure it'll be really that good in standard, to be honest. But,
well, I'm glad you brought it up. I wanted to talk about it because I think that I've heard that conversation too. And I think that's completely insane because, you already mentioned this off the cast. Once you get to four mana, you might as well just cast a Wrath, right? Now,
I mean, it's
mono blue
decks,
yeah. It's one sided, right? It's one sided. But when you're in the business for something like this, in the market for something like this, you don't want to be casting one sided Wrath anyway. You're a control player, or you're mono blue Tron, which is the only place I can see this being of interest to you. And in that case, you have just better options out there. They're much better things. So I don't know. I don't think I'd see this. I don't think this will see much play
as an instant, though.
It's not an instant, it's a sorcery. Yeah, so that's notable too.
If it was an instant.
Oh, sure.
Then you could use it maybe to save your own guys or something like that, but yeah.
Yeah. There is a card called like Washout or something. It's like 3 and a blue, and I think that's an instant. That's from like it's from Invasion Block or something. And it's like return all creatures of a chosen color to their owner's hands. I've been thinking about that a little bit. It's not modern legal, but could it be reprinted in a modern legal set or a standard legal set, excuse me, and potentially be like a modern sideboard card? Because that is a pretty big weak spot for like blue decks or decks that don't have access to white or black. Is like Mono Blue Tron is a great example of a deck where you just have to play like Aetherize and things like that because you can't deal with like hordes of creatures. The best thing you can do is bounce them. And so bouncing them is only so good. But there are times where you're just completely overwhelmed and you need to find some way to like mass bounce them. Evacuation costs 5. That's pretty tough. Selective Snare might be better in certain cases, but I think the fact that it's a sorcery makes it generally worse.
Yeah.
So, let's talk about this black creature though. This guy's kind of cool. It's a Pilfering Imp. It's 1 black for a 1/1 flying. You pay 1 and a black, tap it, and sacrifice to Thoughtseize an opponent. You look at their hand, choose an online card, and that player discards that card. So, I don't know that this is a modern player, but I think that might see play in standard. I don't see why not. It seems pretty strong.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure. I mean, it is 3 mana to just get them to discard a card. You did leave out one line of text that I think is pretty important. It says activate this ability only anytime you can cast a sorcery.
Yeah, that's true.
So I think that's a little bit... I think that's kind of limiting.
Yeah.
Do you want to pay 3 mana to make him discard a specific card? I don't know. I think at that point you might be just looking at some of the cheaper discard options, but obviously it is a flying body.
Yeah.
There's that. I don't know. It's interesting. I don't really think it'll see play.
You don't think so?
No. It doesn't seems seem like it doesn't.
But when you put it that way, it's like, yeah, 3 mana for a Thoughtseize is kind of steep. But if you're like tempo and you get some damage out of it, yeah, and they can see it coming, right?
Prepare for it. You can't ever surprise them with it. You can't do it at instant speed to take advantage of anything there. Yeah. I mean, it is an imp. You know how much I like imps.
Yeah, it will go in the Imp Tribal deck.
Yeah. I don't know. It's interesting. I'm prepared to be wrong, but I don't think it'll really see play.
Okay, fair enough. I'd say we go on to the gold cards in that case.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, that's what we're really here for. So you talked about a couple of them last week. Anything that you want to start off with, John?
Well, you've mentioned Assassin's Trophy, right?
Yeah, we've definitely talked about that one, but let's hear your take on it.
It says destroy target permanent and opponent controls, and it's 2 mana and it's an instant, so I think it's pretty darn good.
Yeah.
They get a basic land card and put it into play, and it's not tapped, but who cares? You're 2 mana instant speed killing something. I think this card is a slam dunk.
Yeah, no doubt. I think that we're getting to the point with anything like this where it immediately comes out and everyone's thinking it like it's the coming of like green black mid-ranges like day in modern, and it's like the greatest removal spell in modern, and it's like going to push other removal spells out of the format. And there's always this pushback of players on those decks going, yeah, it's not really as great as people are saying it is. But really, in the back of their head, they know that this one actually is. It's freaking instant speed. I mean, you can't ask for much more with this. The fact that you're giving them a basic land, whoop-de-doo, right? There are plenty of decks that don't even have a basic land left to search for. So from a modern perspective, I think this card is no doubt going to see play, and it's going to be a main deck inclusion in any of those mid-range decks.
Yeah, I mean, everybody has permanence. Every
right.
deck has permanence.
Yeah, I mean...
You've got something to hit. Like you hit a Tron land, you hit whatever, you know.
Yeah,
I'm sure there's plenty of artifacts that can eat it with an Assassin's Trophy, you know.
Yeah. Let's start in color order here. So we did a little Dimir last week. We talked about the Etrada, the Silencer.
Yes.
Did we talk about Lazav?
Yes, we did, because I mentioned the Phyrexian.
That's right, yeah. Okay. Alright, what do you think of Mnemonic Betrayal? One blue black, sorcery. Exile all cards from all opponents' graveyards. You may cast those cards this turn, and you may spend mana as though it were any mana of any type to cast those spells. Meaning the next end step, if those cards remain exiled, return them to their owners' graveyards. Then you exile Mnemonic Betrayal.
Yeah, so I think it's certainly interesting. There's two things that come to mind. So when you read all of those words, where do you want to be playing your opponent's cards after you've already spent three mana on a sorcery? So
right.
Those times are going to be in, I think, older formats where you have plenty of free spells, Moxen, things like that. I could potentially see this being there. Or Commander, where you just have lots of mana because the games go on forever. So I think Commander for sure, Mnemonic Betrayal is worth playing around with. I don't see much of a downside to having it in your deck if you can cast it. The other formats I'm not an expert on, so I couldn't really say there. But I have heard people talking about this card in Vintage or Legacy.
Oh, have you really? I don't know much about that myself, but I'll tell you what, this is definitely a Commander all-star right here. It's Yawgmoth's Will for all opponents' graveyards, really. And that can only be good in Commander because people are playing big splashy spells. And so it sounds like, let's see, when you cast those spells, do you exile them? Or do they go back in their graveyard? How does that all work? Exile all cards from
opponents' graveyard? No, they go into the graveyard. They'll resolve.
Okay.
Yeah, because it just says at the beginning of the next end step, if any of those cards remain exiled, return them.
Gotcha. Okay, so unfortunately it says Exile Mnemonic Betrayal, so you can't, like, Snapcaster and do it all over again. But this card seems like a lot of fun in Commander, to say the least, and for that reason will probably be sought after by Commander players. It's not going to be very useful in constructed formats, just purely because you don't really know what you're getting, so it's, like, just a risk to have. Now, I've kind of eaten my words with the two mana red creature that comes into play, the daring whatever from Ixalan. Oh, yeah. I can't remember that guy's name.
Slapcaster Mage, people called it.
Yeah. So he gets played in, like, Death and Taxes style decks in Modern a lot because you can vial him into play and, like, take someone's bolt. And that's really good. Obviously, this card is, like, a much has much bigger potential for, like, much more mana. So I don't think that's going to see any play in that format, but much bigger mana leads me to 100 card formats.
This feels to me like a card that is either going to be bulk, or maybe it's going to, you know, hit it off big somewhere, but also maybe it just starts out as bulk and someday down the line it becomes a useful sideboard piece, because I could totally see, you know, maybe 5-10 years from now we have a constructed environment where there is some dominant deck or some combination of dominant decks where they have stuff that you can just beat them with here.
Yeah.
Like, imagine something like a Dredge where you can just steal a very important combo piece or something like that. So I could see maybe this becomes a sideboard piece later down the line. But obviously, as you mentioned, you don't know what you're going to get. So it's hard to see this as a main board in any kind of deck.
Yeah, I mean, so, like I said, the ceiling is very high, though. Like, in a very narrow situation where you're, like, playing against Jeskai control, right? And you can, like, take all their bolts and their electrolyzes and things and cast them that turn. Like, you have to have lots and lots of mana to do that in the first place. And then the problem is they go back into their graveyard. So while you might be able to kill them in certain situations, it's, like, it's probably not going to even resolve in the first place. So, I don't know. But it's definitely a cool card, and I think it'll be a cool foil to pick up because of the EDH appeal.
And it's also got sweet art.
Yeah, it kind of looks like a tattoo that, like, a motorcycle person would have.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think if this becomes bulk, I say, you know, pick up a playset just in case.
Just in case you need to take them into the tattoo parlor for a reference on what you're getting. All right, the one that I'm most excited for in this set actually is also in Dimir, and it's not Assassin's Trophy, which that one is very exciting, but Unmoored Ego is really calling out to me here. This is one blue black for a sorcery. It says, choose a card name, search target opponent's graveyard, hand, and library for up to four cards with that name and exile them. That player shuffles their library, then draws a card for each card exiled from their hand this way. This card is the type of card that we've seen like 15 iterations of, but this one does so many things that those ones have never been able to do. First of all, it can get lands in general, just like even non-basic lands for that matter. But it can get basic lands too, which is sometimes relevant when you're playing, like maybe you've got a Blood Moon on the table, or maybe you know that your opponent only has a few of those left and they're relying on them to search with their fetch lands. I don't know. There have got to be some corner cases for that. But most importantly, the non-basic land part of this, because you can get Tron pieces, you can get Valakut, you can get Grape Shot, you can get Goryeo's Vengeance. There are like so many win conditions that are so obvious when you're playing certain matches. And I think an Esper or Grixis control deck, or really anything Esper or Grixis, would be interested in a couple of these, at least in the sideboard.
Yeah, I think this card's great. I mean, it just hits... It hits so much, and yeah, like you said, if they only have a few of a certain basic land, like that can be pretty big. I like it a lot. I think it's definitely going to be in sideboards and standard. I can definitely see it.
Yeah,
elsewhere.
At least it'll get played in standard, right?
Yeah, I mean it is kind of. I think it is kind of one of the best of this type of effects, just because it is so flexible.
Mm-hmm.
Like what's that old card that costs 2 blue-black and you remove a card in their graveyard from the game and then you search for all of them?
You're thinking of Lobotomy?
Lobotomy, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
That's from their hand, I think, actually.
Oh yeah, look at their hand. Yeah, they've all got like restrictions like that. Like Lobotomy is just so much worse.
Yeah, and that card got played in standard a lot when it was around, but you know, that was like Mirage.
Yeah.
Yeah, Unmoored Ego is 100% better. You don't even have to see the damn card to steal it. So that's the best part of it. Yeah, I think in what we've seen a little bit of this like Eldrazi processors thing going on in Modern. That being like playing like Oblivion Sowers and like the different Eldrazis that benefit from having cards exiled, Wasteland Strangler, things like that, Null Mage, whatever the counterspell one is. This card seems to slot into that deck and be a pretty big asset to that deck. I don't know that deck is even like a real thing, but it's definitely something that's interesting to brew with, and this makes me even more interested to try it because it is just such a hoser. You win games off the back of it. So, anyways, I don't think see anything else in Dimir myself, but if there's anything you want to talk about, let's cover it.
I've got two that I'd like to cover quickly.
Okay.
One is Nightfall Predator. It's an uncommon for blue-blue-black-black. It's a vampire creature, 3/3, flying, death touch, and hexproof.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, kind of restrictive to cast this at blue, blue, black, black, but that's kind of the point of this whole series of cards. There's one for each of the colors in the set. That just seems like an annoying combination of things you get for 4 mana. So, I can definitely see that in standard. And then the other one I wanted to mention quickly was Thief of Sanity. It's a 2/2 creature specter at rare for 1 blue-black. It's got flying, and whenever Thief of Sanity deals combat damage to a player, look at the top 3 cards of that player's library, exile one of them face down, then put the rest into their graveyard. For as long as that card remains exiled, you may look at it, you may cast it, and you may spend mana as though it were mana of any type to cast that spell.
Yeah, it's so, like a better Nightfall Spectre, isn't it?
Yeah, it's got it's kind of like Gonti. It doesn't happen right away like Gonti, where you know you get it when he enters a battlefield, but it is repeatable instead, which I think is kind of cool. It's whenever Thief of Sanity deals combat damage to that player, and you get to cast those cards, you get to play them, right?
You get to
you cast it. So
yeah, cast it.
Play lands. But you may cast that, and it's not just if Thief of Sanity is still around; it's forever.
Oh so, yeah, that's relevant. Yeah. This guy's really cool, honestly. If the skies are clear in standard, this thing is gonna just take over because, I mean, consider like the value of having like a Phyrexian Arena type of effect. You pay 3 for a card that deals 1 damage to your upkeep, and you draw a random card. This puts the damage to the opponent's life total, and it gives you the choice of the top 3 cards of their library. Now, obviously, there are some downsides to that where this has to connect with the opponent in order to do so. and it also has to, like, choose cards from the opponent's library. But, man, we've seen Standard before, and Night Vale Spectre seemed pretty restricting from that perspective, and was still a huge all-star in the Devotion decks. Granted, the mana cost of that was what contributed that to that the most, but people were going as far as to play, like, weird filtering mana rocks and things like that just to be able to cast the cards off the top of their library. This one, you spend any color mana, too. So it's like, yeah, just like all of the things that Night Vale Spectre had going for it, this can do it better. With the exception of Devotion, sorry. Go on.
Yeah, I can see this in Commander potentially, too. Just because there's going to be situations where maybe people don't have an answer to it, and there's just the right combination of creatures on the battlefield that you can attack with this every turn.
Uh-huh.
And those cases, getting a Gonti-like effect of additional card advantage, like, every single turn, I think that's pretty good.
Yeah. All right, shall we move on to Selesnya?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Let's see here. Amara, Soul of the Accord, is kind of cool. Green white for a 2/2 legendary creature elf cleric. Whenever it becomes tapped, create a 1/1 white soldier creature token with lifelink. This was almost like completely broken in modern elves, but the fact that it creates a soldier and not an elf token is a pretty big disadvantage to heritage druid decks. But even though that's the case, I think that this has some applications. I've seen people brewing with it and Smuggler's Copter. Obviously, he's a pretty good friend to Smuggler's Copter, but, you know, from a combo perspective, I don't think there's anything there. I think it's just it's purely a value card.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, in Standard, the idea is you use this for Convoke, right?
Yeah.
So there's that. I think the fact that she's legendary is maybe one of her biggest problems.
Yeah, that's fair.
She's just kind of completely dead in your hand. And the fact that she's just a bear that kind of sits around and waits to be tapped.
Yeah, she's not really that appealing for modern. I think there's some cute things you can do with it, but I don't see it making big waves. Knight of Autumn, on the other hand, I think is a game changer. Knight of Autumn is 1GW for a 2/1 Dryad Knight. When it enters the battlefield, choose one. Put 2+1/+1 counters on it. Destroy target artifact or enchantment, or you gain 4 life. I'm sure you've heard about this card by now. This has been a big deal. It's insane. It replaces Reclamation Sage almost entirely, unless you're in mono green, of course. But the fact that you can gain 4 life with this one is that it means that basically you are making burn players discard 2 cards from their hand. You know, it's like it gives you so much value versus a burn deck. Because it can also destroy the Eidolon of Rhetoric, or Eidolon of Great Revel, or just be like a clock, you know? It's like, that's one matchup where it shines, but it just does so much in so many cases. It's like 3 cards packed into one, and sideboard slots are very limited in this game, so this is very welcomed in those cases.
Yeah, what can I say? It does everything.
I mean, we're seeing the 3/4 sacrifice to destroy target artifact or enchantment played in Standard right now. I can't remember what that guy's called, the Brontodon or something. And
yeah,
I think this guy did better. Yeah, Thrashing Brontodon. So
yeah, I mean, there's an argument whether the power toughness matters at all, or the single color mana.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, if you're just looking at what this does for the CMC, yeah, Knight of Autumn is a little ridiculous.
Yeah,
it's cool.
In formats that have Court of Calling, it's like, this guy's just a slam dunk. In decks that have Court of Calling, I should say. Even as a singleton, it's great, but I can see this in multiples being packed in, you know, in the main deck as well, just because of what it can do. It's under 3 mana, so it can be Cocoed into play. It can be Eldritch Evolution from a Birds of Paradise. I mean, it's got a lot going for it. It's perfect.
Yeah.
All right. You want to talk about any of these other Selesnya cards?
Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk about March of the Multitudes.
Oh, yeah. We did talk about that a little bit on the text.
Oh, you did?
Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I think you guys would have covered whatever I would have wanted to talk about. For anybody who hasn't seen the card, just in case, it is an instant at Mythic for X, green, and white. It's got Convoke and create X11 white soldier creature tokens with lifelink. The only thing I can see this having going against it is that double white. Well, not necessarily just the double white, but the fact that it is green-white limits it a little bit more than some of the other effects, because like you kind of see stuff like this pop up every once in a while in standard. Like, what was he? A long time ago, I used to play the instant that cycled and got you soldiers, or you could cast it to get angels.
Oh, yeah. Decree of Justice.
Yeah, yeah. So you see stuff like that pop up every once in a while. I don't know that we've really had anything like this in green-white specifically, but it's a cool card.
Yeah, I don't know. I wanted to see something in Modern with this, because tokens is always, you know, like a very fringy playable deck, and this seems like a good asset to junk tokens, you know, if you're playing black for Lingering Souls, Flashback and things. I've already made my case on that one, and I will stand by it, but... you know, this is like just straight up can like double your tokens, you know, and with an intangible virtue on the field, it's like even better.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to point out, is it stacks so well because it has Convoke and it's an instant. So yeah, you just cast one of these, your opponent doesn't answer, just cast another the next turn. I think
it unfortunately doesn't provide you much on the front of like tokens are really weak to like Wrath of God, Anger of God type effects. But if you're just like trying to like win as fast as possible with those style decks, I think, you know, being able to attack with your vigilance creatures with intangible virtue on the battlefield, tap them down before blocks and before they're killed and damaged, and then you just like end up with like all of the best blockers in the world because you've got all these 2/2 life linkers now. Seems strong. Yeah. Anyways, there's that one.
Did you talk about Trostani Discordant?
We didn't. That card is so weird.
Yeah, I kind of want to touch on this just because of Commander, potentially. I don't know if it's really playable, but it is a legendary Dryad. It's a 1/4 for 3 green-white. Other creatures you control get +1/+1.
Mm-hmm.
When Trostani Discordant enters the battlefield, create 2 1/1 white soldier creature tokens with lifelink. And at the beginning of your end step, each player gains control of all creatures they own. I don't understand why they combined these specific abilities. I mean, the first two, it makes sense. Yeah, I'm going to get 2 1/1 soldier creature tokens with lifelink. They're going to be 2/2s. Each player gains control of all creatures they own at the beginning of your end step. Why?
It seems very forced, but it's like an effect that we just don't have access to in a lot of cases. And so, like, this is like the only creature I can think of that is something that you could go to in sideboarding when something like Vidalkin Shackles becomes a big deal, you know? And I don't know if that really even matters. It's like a 5-mana creature. So
it's so weird. I could see if you're in a token deck in like Commander,
mm-hmm.
maybe you throw this in just because it's going to pump all your creatures and you get 2 bodies with it. Then it could be pretty good. And yeah. The last clause is maybe just incidental hate against some of those gain control sort of things. Why you would ever want this as your commander, I don't know.
Here's the thing it does. I can think of a couple of cards that might, like, this might care about in standard. One of them being Nicol Bolas. Nicol Bolas gets played, and one of its modes is -4, you can put a creature or planeswalker card from the graveyard onto the battlefield under your control. You can drop this guy and like get some major value swings there. Also the Eldest Reborn, that is the one that is a 4 in a black saga, the last mode being put target creature or planeswalker card from a graveyard onto the battlefield under your control. If your opponent is taking your creatures in that way, you get them back with Trostani, but it's very, very narrow.
Also Rise from the Grave.
Rise from the Grave, yeah.
Yeah, but I feel like all of those options, this card is just so bad against those anyway, because like if you get your creature back from their Nicol Bolas, but then they're just going to use Bolas to kill this thing anyway, right?
Right, yeah.
If it even matters. So, yeah, I don't know.
I think that's probably mostly for Commander players, but...
It's for a token-based Doran the Siege Tower.
This reminds me of the original Trostani, the one that populated and gained you life. That guy was sweet. I used to play Cackling Counterpart with that card. Woo! Fun stuff. All right. Anyways, green-white, we've also got a split card that I think is kind of cool for standard, and that is the Flower Flourish. and it is a hybrid green-white mana for a sorcery. Search your library for a basic land, basic forest or plains card, put in your hand, shuffle your library. And then 6 mana, 4 green-white, that is, for a sorcery that says creatures you control get +2/+2 until end of turn. So for like this like obvious like green-white token sort of strategy in standard, I think that any deck would be interested in a Lay of the Land type of effect, and the upside of having that Lay of a Land become something much better as a top deck later in the game, like a flourish, that seems good, right? Because you certainly don't want to be drawing like the energy card that we used to have in standard, the green mana energy, whatever that was called, Lay of the Land type of effect, top deck, like late in the game when you need something to finish off your opponent is really bad. So completely overcosted flourishes, but it's definitely better than that.
Yeah, the flower side I could see getting played in Commander potentially too.
It does say basic, unfortunately.
Yeah, but I think a deck that would... I don't know. I think some people have use for this. Like, the late game value on the card is kind of nice for some Commander decks, especially if you got tokens or whatever. But
sure.
In Standard, I almost wonder if getting the extra land is going to be worthwhile if you could just play a Lana War Elves. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that a mono white deck could use it for something like that, or a red white deck could use it for some amount of ramp, that could be interesting.
Yeah, that's true. That's something that I didn't even consider. But you're right about that. You can find a basic plains with it, and it can just cost you a white. So, or you can find a forest. Maybe you're a white deck that splashes green.
Exactly.
So, play 4 of those in 1 forest in a draft deck or something.
Oh yeah. Draft, I like. I like most of the split cards like this for draft, for sure.
Yeah.
Just to give you so many options.
All right, on to Is It?
Yeah, let's do it.
Is It time?
It is.
Oh, my God. Okay. What do you like in Is It?
Well, we were just talking about split cards, so let's take a look at Expansion/Explosion.
Mm-hmm.
Expansion, let me crane my neck to the side so I can read these dang things. Expansion is for 2 hybrid Is It mana, copy target instant or sorcery spell with converted mana cost 4 or less, and then standard copy text, you may choose new targets for the copy. Copying spells is, I don't know why, but it just almost never seems like something you want to do. I guess just because it requires that you just have this extra card in your hand.
You just have to be doing nothing.
Yeah, you have so many. All your other spells are so good that you can waste a slot on just copying them.
You're still affected by the spell that's being cast, but you get to do another one, which probably is just like an incidental 3 damage to your opponent at that point.
Yeah. Now, isn't there one? I wonder if it's in this set, or maybe it was a recent one. That's the next time the next spell you cast, you copy. I forget where that was, but that one's a little interesting because it's the next spell you copy this turn.
Okay.
And you're not targeting a spell, so there are some interesting things you can do that. Anyway, the other half of the split card is Explosion. There's a magic card called Explosion. It is an instant for X, blue, blue, red, red. Explosion deals X damage to any target. Target player draws X cards. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Blow up a creature, draw a couple cards, or just wipe your opponent out and draw some cards. I think, obviously, that much colored mana not applying to the X is, it's a big hurdle, but, late game, if you cast this for enough, the game's ending pretty quickly.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting when you compare it to, like, Sphinx's Revelation, because it's one more mana. Sometimes Sphinx's Revelation, for Sphinx's Revelation, I should say, the life gain is probably more relevant to, like, modern format, because the decks that are interested in doing that want to stabilize with all the cards they've drawn. This one speeds up the clock and gives you more cards, so it's kind of more of, like, a counter-burn style deck might be interested in this. But, yeah, 4 mana is a lot to pay. Like, imagine you pay 6 mana, you do 2 damage to a creature, you draw 2 cards. Like, that seems about, like, the best, where the rate starts to kind of turn in your favor, because 5 for 1 damage and 1 card is really bad.
Yes. Yeah, I think Sphinx's Rev is way, way better than this card. for the reasons you outlined. But
so it's definitely interesting, though. And once again, Commander, I think Commander players are going to be pretty happy with this set.
Yeah.
On the topic of split cards, Invert and Invent is pretty cool. Yes. One hybrid blue-red mana for an instant. Switch the power and toughness of each of up to two target creatures. That's kind of interesting. And four blue-red for an instant. Search your library for an instant card and or a sorcery card. Reveal them and put them in your hand and shuffle your library. The fact that is a six-mana instant that tutors two cards from your library makes me think that this has some eternal playability.
Yeah, that's... obviously there are the combo decks that could use the Invert side. They already have options there, but this is a cheaper option than mm-hmm. those, I think. Also, this is the card that I think we joked about has already been errated. Invert is until end of turn, not just forever like the card reads.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But Invent, yeah, the fact that you get two cards of any type for six mana, obviously six mana, which is a problem.
Not any type, instant sorcery.
Really, but yeah, getting two of them, yeah.
Yeah, so the question is, are there two combo pieces, between an instant and a sorcery that can just end the game? Because if you pass the turn to an opponent, you don't need to counter or remove anything, and you can resolve an Invent at the end of their turn, then you can win effectively on the next turn. There's likely something, right? Ad Nauseam has a way to combo out that uses an enchantment and an instant. It has a way to combo out that uses two instants with the Angel's Grace and Ad Nauseam, the namesake card. So obviously this doesn't help you there because it would have to be one of each type, but maybe there's an alternative to one of those cards that, this can find. So.
Yeah, I don't think you get two pieces of a combo. You get a second piece of a combo and a counterspell to protect it, like a Force of Will.
Sure, yeah, like a sorcery combo piece. There's got to be something out there. I think this is pretty powerful and it's kind of going unnoticed in this set. Invert, by the way, is not completely irrelevant too. If this is a card that's played in a Storm deck, Brawl's a 1/3. This becomes a shock, right? And sometimes that matters, And even if you're just trying to play another one mana spell to increase your storm count, this will do it, right? So there are times cool. where we played things like this against Spellskite anyway, because it just kills a Spellskite. Obviously, those usually would cantrip or something relevant, but this is just a little bit of an advantage attached to a card that's already pretty playable.
Yeah. I like it.
Okay. Anything else?
I've got one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got a couple, actually. I think Izzet is one of my favorite combos here, so I think they've done a good job with it in this set. But I like Ionize. This is an instant for one blue and red counter-target spell. Ionize deals two damage to that spell's controller.
Yeah, that's cool.
They've played around with stuff like this before. What was the one before? Was it Undermine? Was that the...
Yeah, blue, Undermine blue? Is the original. There's also a blue-blue-red colorless for something from Invasion or Apocalypse or something that dealt three damage to a target.
Yeah.
It's like a lightning strike tacked onto it.
Yeah, I like this card. I think it could get played. The fact that, Undermine, that one was... like we said, blue, blue, black, and they lose three life. But this one is, I think, one of the first cards like this that's just, three mana and only two of it's colored. So I think that could potentially make this playable in some deck, especially if you look at, Standard, where three mana counterspell is kind of the norm.
Yeah, it has become that.
Anything. I like it a lot. I think it'll get played in Standard. For sure.
Yeah, the question is there going to be a deck for this in Standard? Because if there's a blue-red deck or even a Grixis deck, I don't see why this wouldn't be played because it can just do so much. And it might be that, you get your opponent down to two life and they just have to cast anything and you win the game with this. But there's also an uncommon in here, and I'm trying to find it. I think it's blue-blue colorless for counter-target spell and then Surveil. Does that sound right?
Yes.
Yeah, counter-target spell Surveil 1. So, I don't know. The question is, do control decks want the damage Or are they just more interested in, like, fixing their next draw? And I think Sinister Sabotage is probably more appealing to the style of control decks we have been seeing already.
I don't know. I feel like, haven't we had one that was the same thing but Scry?
Yeah.
I don't really feel like that got played that much.
Because
I think, I don't know.
I think it did. I think it was played. It hasn't been in standard recently. I mean, think about the types of decks we have right now. We've got, like, Teferi-style decks. Like, those decks want to go long, you know? They don't want to, like, finish the game sooner. Now, I don't know what standard is going to look like. Obviously, there's a huge rotation coming, so it's possible that there is, like, a more aggressive, like, kind of tempo-y counter-burn deck. The Izzet Tribe doesn't really lead me to believe that right now. But, you know, there might be something out there with other cards that would be interested in Ionize.
Yeah.
Either way, the art's cool. Looks like it's a Mortal Kombat character.
It's pretty sweet.
Alright, what else did you have?
Have you talked about Niv-Mizzet yet?
A little bit, but we can cover it again.
Yeah, Niv-Mizzet Perun. Is that how you pronounce that, I guess?
Perun.
Perun. He is a dragon wizard, if you're not familiar with who Niv-Mizzet is. He's a 5/5 for blue, red. Can't be countered. Flying. Whenever you draw a card, Niv-Mizzet Perun deals 1 damage to any target. Whenever a player casts an instant or sorcery spell, you draw a card. It's another option to go infinite with a Niv-Mizzet, I guess. And then also, whenever a player plays an instant or sorcery spell, you draw a card. I think that's pretty relevant because he's going to replace himself when somebody tries to remove him.
I mean, that card's like potentially good enough to be like a build around finisher in like a deck in standard. I don't know. Maybe I'm completely off base with this one, but the mana cost is obviously really restrictive, so you can't just like put him anywhere. But if you're building a deck that like can't be countered, like that's a huge piece of text there that, you know, it just happens to be tacked onto this guy that also does like a million things.
I think the fact that he's got so much red in his cost is going to be really a really limiting factor for him, just because I think the control decks that we're going to see coming up here are going to be, you know, blue black or blue white or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be a little tough to get him through, but you know, I could totally see something where, you know, maybe the next couple sets bring us more fixing that make it possible. I could see that.
Yeah, maybe the 3-mana Sarkhan has something to do with it. That guy can provide 2 mana of any color for dragon spells, and this is one of those. So, I don't know.
Totally.
Also can filter, right? So, like, it can loot, you know? So if you've got, like, some lands in your hand, all you need to do is find, like, one instant that, like, can cantrip to, like, start your chain on the next turn.
Yeah.
Speaking of chains, we should probably talk about Thousand Year Storm. That one's kind of cool. This is a mythic. 4 blue-red for an enchantment. Whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, copy it for each other instant and sorcery spell you've cast before it this turn. You may choose new targets for the copies. I mean, that does a whole hell of a lot. It costs 6 mana, but that's a pretty big splash.
I think this card's really bad. this is another in a long line of let's have a mythic card that is red and does nothing. I mean, or just, you know, big red enchantments. You know, if it's a red enchantment that costs more than like 3, you know, it's probably doing something dumb. Obviously there's going to be times when you can do something crazy with this. Like maybe in Commander, you just wait 3 turns and don't do anything and then do it all at once.
I don't know why anybody would. 3 turns. I think this is like the biggest place for this one, or the biggest home for this one is going to be Commander, obviously. 6 mana is like a little too restrictive for any constructed format, like 75 card constructed format. But maybe I'll be wrong about that. Maybe there's maybe Modern Storm can just chain together enough rituals to just like go off with this in a turn. I highly doubt it. Commander decks are going to love this, right?
I think some Commander players are going to love playing this. I think it's going to do anything. I hope my opponents play this card because it means they're not doing anything.
Yeah, I guess the first instant or sorcery you play doesn't do anything, right? It's the second.
Well, it still does whatever it would normally do.
Right. Okay. So you don't get anything out of the 6 mana enchantment that you cast on the last turn. No. I don't know. I've been trying to build Storm and Commander for a long time, and it's really, really difficult to do. But I think that this set gives it a few important pieces.
Wait, what if you cast a cheap spell and then remand it and then cast a bunch of other cheap spells?
Yeah, you could do something like that.
Just draw a bunch of cards. Okay. All right. I changed my mind. It's the best Magic card ever.
All right.
I think there's only one other Izzet card that I wanted to mention. We don't have to talk about it much, but Goblin Electromancer is back in Standard. So.
Oh, yeah. Same art. Cool.
Yeah, and I mean, we obviously just had Baral, which did some cool things, but... this one's not legendary.
Right.
And it's a goblin.
Right. So, yeah. All right. In Golgari, we already talked about Assassin's Trophy. Anything else you want to cover in Golgari, though? There's plenty of stuff in here.
Yeah, Charl Troll. I think this card's kind of interesting. It is a 4-4 for one black green. It's a troll at rare. That right there alone is kind of interesting. 4-4 for 3 mana. It's got trample. At the beginning of your upkeep, exile a creature card from your graveyard. If you do, put a +1/+1 counter on Charnel Troll, otherwise sacrifice it. Then it's got another ability for green and a black and discard a creature card, put a +1/+1 counter on Charnel Troll. So you have this upkeep cost of always having to exile a creature card from your graveyard or you lose the Charnel Troll. So there's obviously that restriction, but the fact that his second ability can pretty much immediately start feeding creature cards into your graveyard means that he can get big very fast. I saw a clip from the pre-release that Loading Ready Run does where somebody got this out on turn 3 and had a card to discard it to it pretty much every turn, and they just won the game in like 4 or 5 turns total.
Yeah.
Just because if he untaps and you have something that you can discard with it, it's attacking on turn 4 as a 6/6 trampler.
Yeah, I'm inclined to think that this guy's actually pretty bad though. That's impressive, but we're in a world where like 5/4 attackers for 3 mana are like pretty common. And the drawback on this guy is enough to make him like potentially unplayable, because yes, you can play him on turn 3 because you are able to untap and then use his ability to pitch a creature card when the triggered ability goes off. So you can keep him alive that way, but you're setting yourself up for a 2-for-1 there, because your opponent holds onto their instant speed removal spell, and the moment you try to discard a creature card and then exile that creature card, this guy gets killed. He has no regenerate, he has no evasion, he has no hexproof. He's just a big, dumb attacker. The trample's a big asset, obviously, and undercosted is good for decks that want to be playing Galta and things like that, but I don't know. Maybe I'm completely wrong about this, but I think that this guy just demands too much of you.
I think in Modern that's certainly the case. I think in Standard that's probably the case. In Limited, I think though there's going to be a lot of games where you can just rush out a win.
That's fair. It'd be great in Limited.
And I do think in some Commander decks potentially it could do something, but you know, the fact that you have to exile creatures when, if you're feeding creatures in your graveyard, you typically want them there for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
But I could maybe see this doing something in Standard potentially in the future if there's more stuff that you can get a lot of value from a creature hitting the yard or something. But in draft, I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah. What do you think of Find Finality? That's kind of interesting. Find is a sorcery. It's 2 hybrid green-black mana. It says return up to 2 target creature cards from your graveyard to your hand. Like, that seems like a good rate already, right? And then Finality is 4 black-green for a sorcery. It says you may put 2 +1/+1 counters on a creature you control, then all creatures get -4/-4 until end of turn. So potentially it becomes like a one-sided Wrath of God. Six mana is a lot.
It's a weird card.
It is a weird card, yeah.
It's a rare, but it doesn't feel all that much more powerful to me than the uncommon ones we've seen.
Right.
Split cards like this. The thing is, these cards that just return cards from your graveyard to your hand don't seem to have much of a home anywhere but Commander, it feels. Just because they're dead until you're already kind of behind and something's in your yard. And returning two creatures for that cost is... It seems it's a fair rate. I could see you playing it in Limited potentially, but even then, like sometimes the like various raised dead effects for two or three mana that get you an extra card. Don't always see play. You kind of need some sort of bomb.
Yeah.
But the finality side potentially being a one-sided wrath is interesting.
Yeah, it's a lot of mana. That's for sure.
Yeah. It's a really weird card. Like, because it's not even really going to be a one-sided wrath, because by the time you cast this, like, unless you're behind, you probably have at least a couple things that are getting killed by that, because you can only put the counters on two creatures.
Yeah.
I don't know. If this card does a lot of stuff that's a little dissimilar.
Yeah, that's kind of the theme of this set, it seems. There's a lot of that.
Yeah, it makes it a little hard to evaluate. You know, I think what this does that's interesting, that's different than most of the split cards we've looked at so far, is a lot of the split cards, it seems like they've got one effect you want to play early in the game and one you want to play later.
Yeah.
And the early one is the cheap mana. You know, okay, maybe I don't feel like I'm going to get to six mana anytime soon. I can use something else. This card's not dead to me. This one feels like it's the opposite. Like, you want to cast the low mana side of it after you've already cast the big one. You want to wipe out all the creatures except for two of yours, and then you want to return the two other important creatures you've got to your hand if you have duplicates of this card.
Right. Yeah, so it seems like they should put it in the opposite order, finality and then fine, so that you realize that.
Well, sure. No, I think that would be bad. But, yeah. I don't know. It's a little hard to judge. I think the fact that you really don't want to use find most cases before you could use finality makes me a little less interested in this card, because I think it's just going to be dead more often.
Here's the problem with the Golgari tribe overall. It's like that all of these cards care about creatures in your graveyard. There's the undergrowth mechanic that cares about creatures in your graveyard. But the only way that I have seen in, like, the Golgari cards to put creatures in your graveyard is to, like, basically discard them from your hand. There's not anything that really dredges creatures in your graveyard. And so to discard creatures from your hand to get advantage, it's like you have to sacrifice so much to get, like, a benefit from another card. And it's just not really worth it in a constructed format to be pitching creatures from your hand. You need to be casting those damn things. The only thing that we have going for this right now, in my eyes, is the fact that Explore will still be around from Ixalan. And Explore is one way to, like, reliably put cards in your graveyard. Hopefully creatures, if you're lucky. But there's still a fail rate on that.
Yeah, I think maybe some of the undergrowth stuff makes you a little more likely to throw creatures in the yard.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it is interesting. Some of them do have, like, kind of counter synergies, or maybe you just feel better casting something that maybe doesn't get as much value, but gets a creature on the board.
Yeah. You know? Let's talk about a card that puts creatures in your graveyard. Vraska, Golgari Queen, 2BG, legendary planeswalker Vraska, obviously. 4 loyalty to begin with. It can +2. You may sacrifice another permanent if you do gain 1 life and draw a card. And that is a permanent. So you can sacrifice a land, you can sacrifice an artifact, a planeswalker, an enchantment, whatever you want. And it's not a thing you have to do. So if you want to just tick her up to 6, you can do that as well. And that's pretty big for a 4-mana planeswalker. -3, destroy target non-land permanent with converted mana cost 3 or less. Abrupt Decay, right? And -9, you get an emblem with whenever a creature you control dies... whenever a creature you control deals combat damage to a player, that player loses the game. What do you think of this one, John?
Well, having a player lose the game seems pretty powerful.
Yeah, it's a good way. That's a good strategy for winning the game.
Yeah, I don't know many things that win you the game faster than an opponent losing the game. I don't know.
Five-player game, EDH.
Yeah, I'm wondering, you know, in standard, what would you want to sacrifice to get, you know, just to get a life and draw a card? That ability, like, yeah, I think the fact that it's a may ability is really just like, you know, hey, if you need to dig for something, here you go.
Sure. I think this sort of goes with the Golgari plan because of the undergrowth stuff, but when you're thinking, like, 3-color decks, like, potentially Selesnya would be more interested in this because of all the tokens they have to sacrifice to this thing.
Yeah, or maybe you even have, like, I don't know, maybe you have something like a treasure or something.
Yeah, something along those lines. Yeah. Treasure is Treasure, yeah, Treasure from Ixalan, that's still around. I just wanted to make sure before we went and said the wrong thing again.
probably a good idea. Yeah, I like her. I think she seems relatively fair for a card that makes somebody lose the game.
Yeah. You could play Hunted Witness with her. That's the 1-mana 1/1. When it dies, you make a soldier with lifelink.
There you go.
Yeah. Two activations on your Braska. Combo.
Well, I mean, I think there's going to be some times when you just destroy a permanent first, and then you just get to tick her up for a few turns and destroy another permanent, and that's probably going to be good enough value.
Yeah, the fact that that is so versatile, non-land permanent, makes me think that there is potential that some modern decks might be interested in this card. You know, like, Teferi's a good example of a card that benefits immensely from its ability to just deal with anything. This can do it for the same cost, -3, at a lesser mana cost. But what it doesn't have that Teferi has is that card advantage kind of stapled with an ability to, like, protect it. Like, this is kind of the opposite, because you're losing a permanent to gain a life and draw a card. Now, there are, like, green-black, like, base strategies like Jund or Abzan that have, like, they have, like, excess lands that they can get rid of at a certain point in the game. But I think that the biggest asset to this card in Modern would be, like, playing Lingering Souls along with, like, Liliana on turn 3, you know, and sacrificing a Lingering Souls token or just throwing some souls out to block for this thing when it goes -3 on its first turn. So, I don't know. It's something that Green-Black already does really well, and so I'm not sure that we really need to pay 4 mana for a Sorcery Speed version of Destroy Target Non-Land Permanent.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to mention, just while we're on the Golgari theme here of putting stuff in your yard, I realized we did miss a couple other options for putting cards in the yard that we should probably mention.
Yeah.
There's obviously the, is it Stitcher's Apprentice?
Yeah, that's a good one.
That's a really good one in the yard. If a deck like this, you know, if a deck that needs undergrowth or just stuff in the yard gets played, I can totally see that.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And there's also Glowspore Shaman. Have you seen that card?
No, what's that?
That is a 3/1 elf shaman at uncommon for black and a green. When it enters the battlefield, put the top 3 cards of your library into your graveyard. You may put a land card from your graveyard on top of your library.
Oh, this guy. Yeah. Yeah, this is definitely a benefit to decks that really care about having cards in the yard. The fact that it's a May is a good thing, because you certainly don't want to have to draw a land on your next turn.
Yeah.
But,
Yeah, I just wanted to mention those since we did miss them, and they could potentially see play in a deck like that, so I wanted to make sure.
Yeah, Stitcher Supplier is 100% going to be a big part of Standard going forward, no doubt.
Yeah.
Okay, Boros?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, we're going to wrap up with Boros today. There's still a little bit left to cover in the artifacts, but maybe we should just do them. There are only like 8 of them.
Oh, yeah, there's
not. We'll finish up. Okay. All right, Boros, let's cover Aurelia, Exemplar of Justice first, because that one is the like big mythic. This is the guild leader in Boros. It's 2 red, white for a legendary creature, Angel. It has flying, it has mentor, and it has at the beginning of combat on your turn, choose up to 1 target creature you control. Until end of turn, that creature gets +2/+0 and gains trample if it's red and gains vigilance if it's white. What do you think of this one?
It reminds me, that ability reminds me a bit of those, like, what was it, something of the God Hand, Shield of the God Hand or something. You know those, like, that was one of them.
Noblesse of War.
Well, I'm thinking those hybrid enchantments that did something. There were auras. Yeah, I forget when they were, like, around Lorwyn or Shadowmoor. Maybe it was Shadowmoor. They were multicolored hybrid, they were hybrid colored auras. And they did one thing if they were one of the colors, yeah. Another thing if they were the other, and then they did both. So it's kind of got that feeling, which I kind of like. It almost feels like a callback to that.
Yeah, absolutely. Those are from Eventide and Lorwyn. Yeah, Steel of the Godhead is one.
Yeah, Steel of the Godhead. That's it. So those are always fun in Commander, especially the one that gives like Shroud or whatever. But yeah, that creature gets +2/+0, gains trample, it's a red, gains vigil. So the obvious is you just target itself, and then you target a different creature with the mentor, because you're not going to mentor much as a 2/5.
Yeah, you're going to Yeah, you're going to be targeting itself more often than not because it's got such a huge butt. It's like it can block everything.
Now, 4-5 vigilant, trample,
flying, mentor. Flying,
mentor. Yeah, that's a lot of abilities.
That's a lot for 4.
Yeah,
this card's really nuts. I mean, the fact that it like has pseudo haste and that it can give a creature that pump the turn it comes out to is a pretty big asset as well. But think about like the flyers we've seen lately. I mean, the biggest thing in the skies is like a 4/1, and this can profitably block the Phoenix. You know, is the Phoenix still gonna be on this Ixalan, right?
Yeah. Oh, jeez. Now I don't know. I'll never be sure.
It's not Flaming Phoenix. What the hell is that thing called? You tell me what you're going to say, and I'll work on that.
Well, the thing I was going to say is there are just so many angels in Standard now.
Rekindling Phoenix in Ixalan.
Okay. Yeah, I could totally see a pretty sweet red-white angel deck.
Oh, man, yeah, I didn't even consider Lyra Dawnbringer and Shalai and all of the friends.
And Splendid Archangel.
Yeah, Resplendent Archangel, that's right. Huh.
Yeah.
Now, they're mostly legends, so that makes it a little tough, but I don't know.
Yeah.
There were angel decks back when we had the Gisela and Bruna. Remember those angel decks? Those were kind of cool.
Yeah. I like this card a lot.
Yeah, it's definitely good.
Maybe it only sees play as like a 1 or 2 of in some deck because it's a... Like, you kind of want an aggressive deck with this thing, so you don't want too many legendary creatures, I don't think, or copies of a legendary creature, but I think this card's sweet. I like it.
What do you think of Deafening Clarion? This one's very weird. 1 red-white for a sorcery. Choose one or both. Deafening Clarion deals 3 damage to each creature and or creatures you control gain lifelink until end of turn.
Why would you not ever want your creatures to get life?
Maybe you just don't care because they're all dead.
This is basically like, here is a 3-mana wrath type effect, but you can also give your creatures lifelink if you don't want to blow up the board.
It's very strange, right? It's 2 like completely unrelated things, seemingly.
Yeah, I feel like I'm going to give my creatures lifelink even if they're all dying.
Doesn't it feel like this was like what happened as a result of like testing a card that said like deal 3 damage to each creature, you gain life equal to the damage dealt, or like creatures get +1/+1 in lifelink for one of the modes, and it was like this is just what like resulted from like a bunch of designs that were much too powerful for 3-mana.
Yeah, I think, this kind of feels like something I think we've been seeing more from R&D, which is, you know, what do we do to make a card that has a back, that has like some sort of downside or some time when it's dead. What do we do to that card so that people for sure play it because it's not going to be dead? And the situations where you maybe wouldn't want to blow up the board is when you have a lot of little creatures and you're kind of ahead, or maybe the 3 damage wouldn't kill everything and you can just use the lifelink to get some advantage out of the card anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe they just thought the red white, 3-mana deal 3 to each creature wasn't good enough somehow.
I think the thing is, like, clearly, like, this tribe is all about mentor and, like, making your creatures bigger. So the plan is, like, they're eventually going to survive this, and the fact that you can give them lifelink and then attack unblocked and unopposed is a pretty big deal. But you're right. It's, like, 2 diverse options that you have when, like, top decking a 3 damage to each creature spell is, like, pretty irrelevant in some game states. Maybe the gaining lifelink is. Like, if you've got your board loaded up with creatures, like, yeah, let's just swing for, like, 17 point, or 18, it's got to be an even number, right? 18 point life swing.
Yeah, I don't even know that it really plays around with Mentor that well. I guess we'll have to see how Mentor works, because the one problem with Mentor is it's always of lesser power.
Mm-hmm.
So... you do, unless you're continuing to put smaller things down on the board or play bigger creatures with Mentor, at some point, the number of creatures that you have, like, they reach an equilibrium, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Can't get bigger than the biggest one. So
yeah, that's fair. I think it's a really good card. I think it's underappreciated. I mean, it's an effect that's certainly appealing. 3 mana for 3 damage each creature. We've had lots of different iterations of that. But I can just see a case where, like, you play this and it doesn't kill everything on the board, and you have a bunch of creatures that are like, yeah, I mean, let's attack. We've got lifelink, you know, so they can finish off the other creatures with combat damage, and then you gain some life to kind of stabilize after that. That way, when you commit to an attack, you can survive the, like, crackback, right?
Yeah, and also it kind of disincentivizes your opponent a little bit from trading off their remaining creatures.
Yeah.
You know, I guess in a lot of cases you'll cast this, maybe you'll kill a few things, then hopefully you attack back, and it's like you're presenting a trade that then becomes less valuable to them because you're also gaining life off the trade.
Mm-hmm.
So I could totally see that. I don't think it's a bad card. I think it's interesting that it's red white. Most of these, or maybe not most, but it feels like lately we've been getting like one red for that damage kind of effect.
Mm-hmm.
I do think it's good. I just think it's a little weird.
Okay, let's transition to a card with the same mana cost here, right next to it. Yeah. Chance for Glory, I think, is really cool. One red white for an instant. Creatures you control gain indestructible. Period. Not until end of turn says they gain indestructible. This is not another one of those ones they've ever added, is it?
I don't think they have.
Okay, I think the idea is that hopefully this will not go on for very much longer, because the next part of this is take an extra turn after this one. At the beginning of that turn's end step, you lose the game. So I think, yeah, the point is that it lasts through that extra turn. This one's weird because you gain an extra turn after this one, and its instant speed means that you can play this in a multiplayer game of Magic, and you can insert yourself between your opponent's turns.
Yeah, you know what? I'm remembering now they didn't have confirmation, because the wording of this one is so similar to Invert. They did have confirmation that this one is forever.
It's a little funky and awkward that you have to just remember that, but I mean, there are plenty of other things that are just like assumed, you know, from, you know, that you just commit to memory. But yep. Usually they would like put an indestructible token or something on those creatures, you know?
Whatever. Yeah, I've got four words for you, Corey.
What?
Sundial of the Infinite.
Yeah, end the turn, right?
Just end the turn, and then you have indestructible creatures forever, and you got to take an extra turn.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I mean, Sundial of the Infinite in this obviously is it gives you incentive to like get a free turn out of a card, but indestructible forever is like something that is pretty relevant.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool, especially when you can snapcaster this guy back and then attack with your indestructible 2/1, because creatures you control gain indestructible tells me that the creatures you play after this card is resolved also have indestructible, don't they?
No, I don't think they do.
No, just
I think it's just
NPCs.
I think it's just one. Yeah, because it's the same as what's the green saga for one and a green? Your creatures gain tap to add one mana of any color.
Oh yeah, I know what you mean. Yep,
yeah, that one just—it's just the creatures that are in play at the time. I'm almost 100% positive.
Okay, that was that totally makes sense. I suppose if you snapcaster this, it is in play.
Yeah,
but whatever. For what that's worth,
this is the kind of card that I think is really cool, and it's gonna go perfectly in my awesome Sundial of the Infinite deck. I'm totally gonna build. And then other than that, it's probably bad.
Maybe it's like standard might want like one copy of this, you know, like it's just like you need that one extra turn to finish them off. It's just so castable. It's like, why not?
Well,
the indestructible could be like, okay, you block profitably, your creatures survive it, and then the next turn you kill them on the crackback. How cool is that?
Yeah, but maybe they like bounce the one creature you needed to actually get through. Or they tap all your creatures down.
Great risk, great reward.
Yeah, I don't know. It's probably a really bad card, but it's cool. I like it a lot.
It's only 3 mana. How could it be bad? All right.
Yeah, but because you lose the game at the end. Did you read that part where you lose?
Well, I hear that's something you don't want to be doing in this game. No. All right, what else you got in Boros?
Let's see. I don't actually know what this card does because I haven't read it yet, but we've covered all of them, so I feel like we should cover the Boros rare split card here.
Mm-hmm. It's good.
Response and Resurgence. It's a little weird because there's no connecting word this time around, right?
Yeah.
It's a little hard to say. So Response and Resurgence. Response is for, like the rest of these, 2 Boros hybrid mana. Instant Response deals 5 damage to target attacking or blocking creature. That gets a big meh from me. Attacking or blocking. It's pretty limited. I mean, it is 5 damage, so it's going to kill most of the things that are attacking you.
Yeah, there's that.
those conditional removal like that is always a little iffy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of the things you want to kill just aren't getting into combat. But anyway, Resurgence is a sorcery. For 3 red white, creatures you control gain first strike and vigilance until end of turn. After this main phase, there is an additional combat phase followed by an additional main phase. That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, dude.
Well, hang on. So this one's really interesting because it's an additional combat phase card. We've seen a lot of stuff like that in the past.
Mm-hmm.
5 mana is around the price you normally pay for that kind of effect. But this one, unlike most of the others, gives them an ability. You know, you get first strike and... Oh, yeah, so it's vigilance. For some reason, because I'm craning my head to the side and trying to read this thing, even though I read it, I missed that they get vigilance. Okay. So the thing I was getting at is most of these effects that get you another combat step or phase,
untap
I should say. They're untap them. But the fact that it gives them vigilance, I think the only case this kind of limits things is because sometimes you can take advantage, and this is mostly in Commander, you can take advantage of that extra combat by maybe tapping creatures to pay for this or to do some other ability and then untapping your creatures and getting that in addition to the combat. But man, the fact that it gives them those 2 abilities and gives you another combat has me really kind of interested in this. It's, you know, maybe that red-white angel deck, you know, just finishes them off. Like, it's kind of hard to deal with taking 2 attacks from a bunch of first-striking creatures.
Yeah, it's. I think it's pretty strong. I mean, the fact that it has, like, a pretty, like, efficient removal spell relatively tacked onto the front side of it, it's like you already need to run removal in your deck. So this one's a little more limited than Justice Strike, which we'll talk about in a moment here. But the upside of it is that, like, yeah, you just actually can use this as a finisher when that's relevant. And First Strike makes the creatures pretty hardy. It's pretty difficult to block and kill attackers that have First Strike. So that's pretty strong.
I think one of the strengths we're seeing of these split cards is for Constructed, a lot of them, it seems like they get better in multiples in Constructed because, like, you can imagine if you're doing this, like, kind of late turn, you know, turn 7 or whatever, if you can do Resurgence and then cast Response on one of their blockers, like, if you've got a bunch of First Strike creatures, your opponent may be in a situation where they need to commit 2 blockers to taking out one of your guys.
Yeah.
And if you're able to Response to take out one of their blockers in Response, I wonder if that's what they're getting at. if you do that, you could totally blow them out. Take out their only creature maybe that they had that could block.
Yeah.
And just, like, really wallop them.
Yeah, man.
I like it.
Let's talk about Justice Strike, since I alluded to it a moment ago. Yeah. It's uncommon, red-white for an instant. Target creature deals damage to itself equal to its power. It's kind of like a red-white terminate in a way, in that it is a 2-mana gold card that functionally should kill most creatures. Generally, Magic cards are designed with more power than toughness. In the case for, like, Aurelia, Exemplar of Justice, and a few limited other options in Standard at the moment, most everything will kill itself if it's forced to deal damage to itself. And when it doesn't, this is an instance that can be paired with regular combat damage to finish them off, or other burn spells.
Yeah, I think I think maybe even more than having more power than toughness, you have a lot of creatures are just 2/2, 3/3, 4/4, you know, the same.
Right, yeah. That too.
Obviously there's those cases where if they have a bigger booty, they're not dying. But the cool thing is this, you'll see this more in, I guess, Limited, because you don't really see pump spells that much in other in Constructed. But in Limited, a way that you will save a creature is by pumping it.
Mm-hmm.
And in a lot of cases, this, like, there's very few cards in Limited that are just pumping toughness. So that they can't really save it from this.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's kind of cool. I'm glad they resisted the urge to put a quit hitting yourself reference in the flavor text. So that's good.
Yeah, it's. Oh man! All right. Anything else in Boros? Tajik is kind of cool.
Yeah. I think we should mention that just for potential commander. Tajik Legion's Edge is a legendary creature, human soldier at rare for one red white. It's got haste. I should mention it's a 3/2. It's got haste, mentor, and then two more abilities. Prevent all combat damage, or sorry, all non-combat damage that would be dealt to other creatures you control. So you can't really bolt any of the other creatures till this one's gone. And for red and white, Tajik Legion's Edge gains first strike until end of turn.
It's a lot of text.
Yeah, it's a lot of text. I think the first strike is very good for the mentor. You know, not many of the creatures with mentor have any kind of protection on themselves. Like, that's kind of how you balance the fact that you're getting another power and toughness on another creature, is that a lot of them have much less toughness than power. Like, you see a lot of, like, you've got 3/2, 4/3, 3/1, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of nice. Or you have the one angel that has the big booty, and that's how it, you know, it survives going to combat.
Yeah.
I don't know that you'd ever want this as a commander, but...
Yeah, I don't know. There are people out there for everything.
Yeah. It's now, the card that is obviously meant for the mentor deck is Swiftblade Vindicator right next to it.
There. Yeah, we got to talk about that guy. That thing's nuts.
Yeah. And I think it's just because of how many abilities you get for this mana. So it is a 1/1 for white and red. It's Human Soldier at rare, Double Strike, Vigilance, Trample.
Oh, it's a human. I didn't even consider that. I don't know if Modern wants this, but if you can Aether Vial this into play, or even just cast it and then play like a Dahlia's Lieutenant or something, that adds up pretty quickly. Double Strike, Vigilance, Trample is no joke either.
Yeah, Double Strike Vigilance, you know, you give this any kind of buff, you know, you put a Reaper on this or something, you know?
Well, the humans can just so easily be chump blocked because they get huge, but they don't have any evasion, they don't have any trample, usually with the exception of Mantis Rider. So this one right here having trample is a pretty big asset. But I don't know, maybe Modern doesn't want it. Like, the human deck is pretty stacked already with its choices, but it's definitely good for Standard, and I can almost 100% say that, or with 100% certainty say that there's going to be some kind of, like, sort of Infect-style deck that uses this type of card, because there always is. I don't know if you remember the Soulbound decks, where we had the Soulbound guy that gave Double Strike, and it's just a Boros, like, crack-em-in-the-face deck. This thing is just so cheap, and, like, it has everything that it needs to be good. It just needs, like, giant growth now, you know?
Yeah, I think you put any kind of permanent buff on this guy, and it's just so, like, what do you do as the opponent besides remove it? Like, you're not engaging in combat with this thing, you know?
Now, the question are there spells that give it, like, Hexproof at instant speed? You know, are there spells that can kind of protect it a la Infect and a la, like, the, you know, the cards that are played in the, oh my gosh, the Fiend, the Kiln Fiend, that's the deck. Kiln Fiend style decks.
I mean, not in these colors, I don't think. I don't think you're going to really protect it from anything. You're just kind of hoping. I think you're just, with a card like this, in at least in Standard, I think you're just kind of hoping that you can overwhelm your opponent with so many different things that are all a big problem that, you know, I don't know. It, like, even if you just curve out with Swiftblade Vindicator next turn, attack with Tajik, you're attacking on turn three with a 3/2 haste and
a 2/2 double strike vigilance, 7 damage.
Like, turn three, like, sure, your opponent's gonna, hopefully for them, get rid of one of these two creatures, but does it matter that to you which one? Probably not. Because turn four, you're going to drop something else that they have to deal with. So
maybe there's some equipment out there that I'm not considering too, but not in this set. Come to think of it, before we move on from Boros, go back to Tajik for a second. This is a human soldier. Modern humans may be interested in this guy out of the sideboard because of the prevent all non-combat damage that we dealt to other creatures you control clause. You could kind of, like Spirits does, flash this guy in to basically give your humans hexproof against, like, Jeskai-style decks or Burn decks. And then, you know, obviously swing in the opposite direction entirely with a 3-2 mentor haste on the next turn.
Yeah, that can potentially be first strike too.
Yeah, right, yeah. Which is very important when you're dealing with, like, burn, because they've got all the 2-2s and the 2-3s in their Monastery Swift Spears and their Goblin Guides.
Yeah.
And Eidolons. All right, so we go into Artifact and wrap this up here. All right, cool. I don't have too many to talk about in Artifact, but Rampaging Monument looks like it's going to be pretty good in Draft. 4-mana Trample enters the battlefield with 3+1/+1 counters on it. Whenever you cast a multicolored spell, put a +1/+1 counter on it. Anything you want to talk about in Artifacts?
Well, I think it's worth mentioning the lockets. The lockets, we've got one for each of the five color combinations represented in this set. I'll just read off Dimir Locket here. 3-mana artifact. It's a mana rock. It taps for blue or black. And then for 4 of those hybrid mana, tap, sacrifice, draw 2 cards.
Pretty good.
Yeah, I think in... I don't know if it'll really get played in Standard, because I don't know how many times, like, even Manalith gets played in Standard. Maybe if there's something that needs the extra ramp at 3-mana, maybe that'll get played. But obviously in Commander, I think if you're playing a 2-color deck, like, I think most Commander decks will play, you know, a Manalith-type rock, especially if you don't have necessarily the money for all the really cheap mana rocks.
Yeah.
And drawing 2 cards, I think, is really good, especially if you're looking at, like, Boros. Like, red-white decks, a big problem with them in Commander is that they can't really draw cards.
Sure.
So a mana rock that can draw cards, I think that's...
I tell you what, I can almost guarantee that these are going to see play in Standard in some decks. However, I don't think that the Boros one is very relevant because of the fact that Boros wants to be aggressive. They're not going to be interested in taking a turn off to, you know, increase their mana count. But the control style deck certainly will. And the ability to draw 2 cards later when you don't need the mana is a pretty big asset to these. You often see them give you 1 card when you crack them. 2 cards is, like, twice as good.
Yeah. I mean, drawing cards is, like, the only thing better in Magic, the only better mechanic in Magic is winning the game.
Yeah, when your creature still damages your opponent, you win the game.
Yeah. So I guess the thing that we'll have to find out is how big do control decks end up going in Standard after rotation?
Mm-hmm.
You know, can they take a turn off? Like, turn 3 is usually a big turn for countering something, so do you take that off to play the locket?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah. Chamber Sentry is really cool. This guy is no Walking Ballista, but he's, like, better in certain situations, probably. X mana, artifact, creature, construct. Enters the battlefield with a +1/+1 counter on it for each color of mana spent to cast it. It has Sunburst, right? Isn't that just Sunburst?
Yes.
And it says, pay X, tap, remove X +1/+1 counters from it to deal X damage to any target. It's pretty good. And then you can pay 1 of each color, Wooburg, return Chamber Sentry from your graveyard to your hand. I mean, like, if we're, like, back in the Vivid Lands days of Standard, this guy is really strong and a pretty great finisher, pretty awesome blocker, excellent removal spell, and just, like, the ability to recur that is really good.
Yeah, I think the fact that you can't use its ability right away, I think it's a big hindrance on this.
Yeah, agreed.
Like, that's really one of the, I mean, among the many combo options with the Walker, like,
yeah, it's fact no Walker. I'll make that clear.
No, it's not. But the fact that it's just X, you know, I don't know. I don't think it's really going to see play anywhere. This feels like a bulk rare to me.
It's really good in Limited.
Is it?
Yeah, I think so. If it's just like 2-mana 2-2.
Yeah, I think at a 3-3, it's like really, really, really good. At 2-2, it's probably very good. Yeah.
No, I don't know. It's hard to assess. It's weird. But yeah, it's probably just going to be bulk. I'll admit that now and hope to be surprised later.
Yeah. The only other card that I really... I mean, and there's obvious, like, a couple cards here that are pretty good and limited, but the only other card that I wanted to mention is just Chromatic Lantern. In case anybody listening doesn't play Commander, it's a 3-mana artifact. Lands you control have tapped, add 1 mana of any color, and it itself taps to add 1 mana of any color.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great card. I mean, I kind of feel like it can go in pretty much any multicolor Commander deck, so it's good that we're getting a reprint. And
Wand of Verdbrain, you know, might see play. 1-mana artifact, tap, put the top card of your library in your graveyard, pay 2, tap, exile it, shuffle up to 5 target cards from your graveyard into your library. That's a lot that you can get back in your library. If nothing else, it'll see play in the Singularity format that we have posted on our website if you're interested in that. That's a 15-card deck that you draft. It's a cube designed for that, and you do not mill. This card is just like made for that format, but in constructed formats and constructed environments, I think that Standard might be interested in this just because of the lack of like the Stitcher Supplier type effects that you can do on turn one. Besides Stitcher Supplier, this is like 4 more copies of like functional like fuel for the, you know, Golgari fire.
I don't see it.
You don't see it. It's a little slow, right?
I think it's just too slow. If you draw this like later in the game too,
mm-hmm.
you just like, why do I have this card in my deck? Yeah.
All right.
You know, cool. I'm wondering, we've only got like a couple lands here if you want to touch on them.
Yeah, I didn't really consider lands. I mean, I think it's old news now that the shock lands are in this format or in this set.
Yep. That's a big deal. The only other lands that we've got besides the Gates, which are just enters tapped dual lands at common, they are in every booster pack.
Oh, they
this
are.
Time around.
Okay. That's cool.
Limited. They replaced the basic land, I believe.
Oh.
Or at the very least, they're in every pack, so you can have a better chance of pulling off some of these multicolor decks, mm-hmm. or maybe even some of these 5-color gate decks. That's kind of cool. We also have Gateway Plaza. This is a common gate, enters tapped, and then it's one of those lands. It enters tapped, and you sacrifice it unless you pay 1, and then it taps itself for 1 of any color. So that's kind of something that could be helpful in Commander,
yeah,
particular.
It's exactly
decks.
Rupture Spire.
Yep, but it's a gate.
Yeah.
So it,
oh,
does
it is
count.
A gate. Okay, yeah, cool.
And then the only other one, this is Guild Mage's Forum. This is our only other rare land. Taps to add a colorless, and for 1, tap, add 1 mana of any color. If that mana is spent on a multicolored creature spell, that creature enters the battlefield with an additional +1/+1 counter on it. So it basically just says you can filter a mana through if you've got an extra, you know, play something off curve, get a +1/+1 counter. Again, this is something I think maybe for Commander, you know, when you're going long and you can totally afford that extra 1 mana.
Yeah, it's like it doesn't come into play tap, so that makes it a little easier, but I don't know. I'm not so interested in this. If there's a general that really cares about having +1/+1 counters on it, that's probably going to be an auto include in those decks, obviously, but I can't really think of many. Gabe probably wants it.
Yeah. In Standard, I think the idea is maybe you use it for some of the multicolored mentor cards or something like that, maybe. I don't know.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
But those are cards you really don't want to play off curve.
Yeah, Animar might be interested.
Sure.
That's cool. All right. Anyways, that is Guilds of Ravnica. I think we've covered everything we can. We went really long today. But thanks for sticking it out, John. It's nice talking to you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This has been a lot of fun, you know, getting to talk through all these cards. And I'm sure we missed some stuff, so it's always exciting to see, you know, maybe take a look back at this in a couple months and see, you know, what did we overlook. I'm sure there's something amazing that we just completely overlooked.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope to be proven completely wrong by some of my assessments on these cards, because that always makes things more interesting. And reminds me that this game is deep, and even though you've been playing for a long time, you can't look at a chunk of cards and predict the metagame, you know? As often as we think, what was Wizards thinking when they printed, like, the Goblin Chain Whirl or whatever? Because obviously this deck would exist. Like, no, we didn't see it at the time, you know? No one expected Goblin Chain Whirler to be what it was today. So it's hard to evaluate cards, and we're likely wrong about a lot of them, but once again, that's what makes this interesting. All right, talk to you later.
Thanks.
Card Knock Life is proud to be a part of mtgcast.com. We can be reached at cardknocklifepodcast.com or on Twitter at card_knock_life. We're always looking for more help in generating content for the website. And if you'd be interested in doing so, please email at cardknocklifepodcast@gmail.com.